Hello and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am John Kirby, your co-host. You can find me at Twitter at @John_Kirby. I think you got that right. And we have not one, but two other co-hosts, your favorite co-hosts, the ones that you yearn for and actually ask for often. The Sarahs have joined us for this week's edition. Sarah Norris and Sarah G. And Sarah G, you know I'm very terrible at last names, so that's why I didn't even start.
Listen, Sarah G is good enough. That's what I've been my whole life. But if you want to see my nonsense on Twitter, especially about Christmas Hallmark movies right now, I'm at sgender.
And you can find me on Twitter at Sarah Norris. That is Sarah with an H.
Awesome.
Okay. Boo. Oh, sorry.
We're already booing up there.
Yeah.
So we are recording live, right? Tuesday night after a most recent Michigan State basketball game, but we are going to only have good vibes. We decided on good vibes only. You know, this could have been a doom and gloom pod. We decided against it. Maybe that creeps in. Who's to say?
We did decide no doom. That's what we decided.
We're going to try.
Okay, see, great. Okay, I'm back.
By the way, the name of this call is Doom Pod, so maybe a little doom. Maybe like sprinkling.
But let's start out with the most recent result. You know, let's start with the basketball, the favorite son, you know. And when you're the favorite son, like we talked about, it's just like a higher expectation that comes with it as well. And, you know, MSU just lost in the Champions Classic to Kansas. The final score, I don't even have it in front of me.
87-74.
Thank you. See, like, didn't sound that bad, but then you say it out loud and you're like, 87 points is a lot.
That's a lot of points.
Not good. But I'm going to hand it over. You guys watched it with clear eyes and full hearts. I was not. I'll let you take what happened here.
You know, we were talking about this before we jumped on here, but we all came in with like, well, most fans that I saw, we came in with that same attitude where it's like, you know what? We're just going to tune in. How lucky are we? Basketball's back. Fans can go to the games. It's going to have some energy. Yay. And, you know, things were fine at the beginning. Things were moving along. We saw some positive play. Then those little turnover guys came out. And then by the end, we had just lit ourselves on fire and hope for the best. And then we all walked away feeling disappointed. And thus, we are who we are as Michigan State basketball fans. We try to temper expectations, and then we get thrown right back in it. And now we're sad.
Yeah. I texted Sarah about 4 minutes after tip-off. I'm trying to manage my expectations, but I just want our favorite sons to thrive. And that's really, like, we just want them to be good. And, like, they weren't bad.
No.
They were bad in some parts.
Sure.
But we have watched the game. They hung in for most of the first half. You know, the end of the first half got away from a little bit. Tom did the thing where he sat somebody down to play a freshman, and it was kind of trash. You know, Jaden Akins obviously needs some.
Yeah.
But there were bright spots. Out-rebounded Kansas, I believe, 37-30. Last time I looked at the.
Wow. Yeah. That shocks
40
me.
40-30.
Yeah, 40-30 was what we ended up with. So yeah, there are some areas where they played really well. They had 16 turnovers to Kansas's 9, and the free throw shooting was abysmal. Oof. And if you take like half of that back, if they make 50% more free throws and have 50% fewer turnovers,
yeah,
it's a different game. Like, and that's not, we're not asking for an improvement that is totally out of the world, out of this world, you know? And also, Michigan State, unranked.
Yep.
Kansas, number 3 team in the country.
Sure.
So,
I have to point out quickly about Kansas is the average age of the people on that team is 37, and that's without Cary Ellis. I remain shocked. They have a 25-year-old man who has played at four schools.
Like, at what point does he pack? Like, unpack? Does he just keep it all in his bags and it's just like...
I mean, I'm sure there's like an athletic article somewhere that I can find. Because like, I need the story about why that man is... Is he the one who's 26?
No,
he's 25. Jalen Coleman Lands.
And
he started at Sorry, I keep cutting you off. He started playing at Illinois for two seasons, then transferred to DePaul, where he was a redshirt and played one season. Then he went to Iowa State, and then he went to Kansas. Of course he went to Iowa State, because
that's where they go.
Yeah.
Of course. And then, well, and DePaul, right? And then also Mitch Lightfoot, 24. So, like, and I hear these kids are kind of paid now, so I feel like I don't love to criticize amateur athletes, but, like, I've got to feel like Mitch Lightfoot's making a buck, so I get to say one thing. Go get a job, man. Like, it's too much. Like, your point, just, like, move on.
I just pulled up his stats page on ESPN, and listener, please go do this. In his roster photo, he looks like a bank manager. Like, just go do that.
Go do that.
Go sell cars somewhere. Like, leave us alone.
you should be a doctorate student. Like, I need multiple degrees, man.
At least.
And I get that some people are staying an extra year because of Twitter or whatever. That doesn't explain you being 26.
No, exactly. This is absurd. If you can rent a car without any problem. Can't be on a basketball team in college.
You're too old. It's
too much.
Somebody
else on Kansas so there's a couple of things. One, somebody in the Champions Classic always gets a career high against Michigan State. Taylor's oldest time, right? Tonight it was OJ, I practiced this, Obagi.
Yes.
Yep.
It's just like it looks. Anyway, Obagi got, he ended up with 29 points. I will say this about Obagi, at least it's not like the 10th guy down the bench who went against Michigan State. This is not a boo-booey situation. Oh, no.
Actually, that was awesome. Obagi is like one of the better players that I think we've seen in the Champions Classic that was actually like showed up and was that guy.
He was incredible.
He kind of looked like an NBA guy.
Like, yeah,
he's on the mock draft boards. Like, that's fine, you know?
Did he go to the draft last year and then pull his name out, or did I make that up? It may have been any number of the other people on Kansas, but we don't care about facts here, so I'm going to say, yeah, he did. And he looks ready, right? Like, he looks like he belongs in the NBA, and I'm not just saying that because he worked my team. He is incredibly talented. So I guess in some regards it was like, okay, we're going to start the college basketball season. I love to watch like a good game like that. Not saying that playing Eastern Michigan or Western Michigan isn't like fun. I like beating teams, but I also like seeing the rest of the talent around the country. So yay for that, I guess. You know,
and I think the Champions Classic is like an unqualified success. We lose in it like 80% of the time, but like obviously the publicity is good. It's good for recruiting. Tom is going to schedule one of these people anyway.
Exactly.
So, like, let's get it out of the way. You know, so I think that the Champions Classic is great. I don't like it when we're the only not top 10 team in it, but, you know, that's what it is.
Everyone has a turn. And, you know, these are the types of games that I think you kind of it helps you grow up a little quicker. Like, Max Christie, you know, he certainly didn't take over, but he looked like he belonged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind he didn't play very much in the second half, I thought. Is that correct?
He just kind of disappeared a little bit.
Yeah. But he didn't do bad. He had more points than Joey Hauser.
I mean, he looked capable, you know, and that's kind of what you look for, especially on freshmen, is it kind of it grows you up really quick. And, you know, and to be fair, you can have bad games in these early season ones and still have great careers. Gary Harris, my favorite player of all time, had a really bad first game against Connecticut and in Germany, I believe. And it's just like, it's just tough. But I do think there is something to seeing a kid like Max look like he belongs.
Yeah.
And I think that's we can have a pretty good idea he's going to be very a positive player the rest of the year. Right?
And honestly, 9 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 turnovers, which is what Christie had, is about what you expect for a freshman at the first game.
Yeah.
He was 2-4 from 3, very good. 3-10 from the field, not so good. Work on the short and mid range game a little bit, but I agree with John. I think he looked good. You know, I was not displeased with what I saw for sure.
Yeah, I think, and looking at him play, I think, you know, to echo what John said, is like, he looked perfectly capable. He just needs more time. Like that's how I see him. And then, you know, I wasn't sure what to make of Jaden Akins, and I would say he was on the opposite end of that spectrum, right? And again, it's early. I'm not saying doom or gloom on any of this. I'm just saying, like, yeah, for a first game, you kind of have to assess people. And for Akins, yikes, is how I felt about that. Yeah. And maybe that's a little bit harsh and getting overwhelmed in the moment. But, you know, if you compare it to what Max looks like, they're pretty opposite. Well, and then the other disappointment, I hate to say it, Tyson Walker was, whoo boy.
Well, not every transfer last name Walker can be. It's a little unfair. You know, I think we were all maybe we were whelmed. I don't want to say under. It left something to be desired.
Well, and we talked about the 16 turnovers, and like obviously point guard play for Michigan State last year was a thorny spot. It's going to continue to be a thorny spot. So Walker, you're looking for more than 2 points and a flat one assist to turnover ratio. Oof. But on the point guard positive side, AJ Hogard, I know Don mentioned Austin has stock in the AJ Hogard fund, and I too have been on the AJ Hogard train. That stock is rising. He had a career high, 17 points, and played really well. Also, yep, our favorite thing, a before and after freshman to sophomore,
yes,
body transformation
pick. That's right.
They said that he lost 20 pounds, and I don't think he really looks it. You can tell that he put on a lot of, you know, he looked strong. He was able to drive the lane. He obviously also has some turnover issues, like a little bit lazy passing at times, but nothing that, like, he looks so much more comfortable. We talked about freshman comfortableness, I guess.
Yeah.
He was really pressed into service last year a lot, and a lot of times he looked pressed last year. And he got better as the season went on, as you would expect. So now, you know, those kind of shaky minutes playing dividends. He's playing at Madison Square Garden against the number 3 team in the country, led Michigan State in points with 17. So you can't really ask for much more from AJ.
Yeah, he was mentally tough. Like, he rose to the challenge of this. Like, he didn't start. You know, Walker got the start. Walker was shaky. Hogard came in and asserted himself really quickly. And, you know, I don't know what that means for the future. I don't know if you can decide off of one game if that means that Hogard should be the starter. I don't know if that's fair. You know, Tom Izzo obviously saw months of these guys practicing, but it's encouraging. I think the positive spin is to say, okay, well, Hogard, in a worst case scenario, that's what you have. And that's not bad. Like, that's compared to last year, like you were both saying, like, that's a huge leap, and that's great. So the other guy,
because the box score doesn't have the minutes breakdown. I was curious, like, how many minutes he played versus Walker versus Akins.
For sure.
I don't have that yet. Yeah.
The other backup that came in and asserted himself because he needed to was Julius Marble.
Correct.
He had a nice game, and it was largely because he was called upon because Marcus Bingham got in a little bit of foul trouble. And, you know, again, I think that's another example that is going to pay off in the long run. I don't know what you guys think, but you've seen the Big Ten centers.
Like, yeah.
I love Julius Marble. I feel like there should be a way that it can be figured out that he can be in the starting lineup, because he's the second leading scorer tonight.
He had 13 points and 7 rebounds. That's a good game. That's a real good game.
5 for 6 from the stripe.
Yeah.
In a game where Michigan State shot 56% from free throw.
Yeah.
Start him.
He's mentally tough. So he's a tough kid, and he's like, and that's not to say that others aren't on the team aren't, but there are a couple, like A.J. Hogard is clearly a mentally tough kid. He heard all the criticism last year.
He heard all the body shaming.
Yeah, I mean, and that's like your, yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
And
something.
outside of the stat line, if there is a loose ball and people are on the court and they're trying to get the ball and Julius Marble's in the game, he is there. He is like on the floor smacking people around, you know.
There was one play tonight where he had leapt into the bench and then somehow got back on the court and was ready to, like, get the next rebound before anybody had shot again. He's everywhere. And I love to see the growth with him, especially when I remain a little dubious on Bingham, if I'm honest with you, because I keep waiting for the next step. You hear about the gym time. You hear about him improving his strength. You hear about, you know, although they were talking, you know, this game about how, you know, he has clearly spent a lot of time in the gym, but you won't see it on his body. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But will I see it in his play? Cause I'm not so sure. And also, I know we love it when he makes a three, but why are you taking those shots? Yeah. Get to the post, do a little hook shot. Like, why are you out there? You are not on this team to be a perimeter shooter.
He was 0 for 3 tonight.
Yeah. I mean, that's my point, is it's just like, that's not what I want from you. That's not what we need you for. Stop trying to force that play.
And I think he got the start, but I'm looking at the box score, and Kerb said he was in foul trouble. He only had one foul. He barely played the second half.
I think he was tired.
I wonder if it's a conditioning issue.
I think he was tired.
And that's yikes. Like, he played, and this is like kind of the Marcus Bingham story. He plays like the first half of the first half.
Yeah.
Like a house on fire, you know?
Yeah.
Like Gabe Brown, where he comes out, the two of them are cranked, right? They're on one. And then, you know, he kind of fades as the game goes on. And yeah, and then Julius Marble is out there diving from one side of the court to the other, you know, getting in a fist fight with McCormick. Bargain bin Dwight Howard. So you know, it's just, you look at the starting lineup and you look at the way things went tonight and you think to yourself, you have to think to yourself, as we go into the next game, as we go into like the more softball part of the schedule where we try to tune things up, does that starting lineup change, you know? Because I think some guys made a really strong case in this game. To start.
Is there anyone you specifically want removed from the starting lineup, Sarah? Is there?
Look, I came on this podcast last year and I slandered Thomas Kipier. This year, Joey Hauser and the Joey Hauser experiment. I'm done with it.
Yeah.
I'm done. Talk about, you know, this play, a lot's going to get made of this probably. There's that one play where the ball was going out of bounds to the corner and Hauser neither went for the ball, nor did he close out on the Kansas player trying to go for the ball. And it's like, if you want to stand in the middle of the court and do nothing, like, go back to Marquette. Like, don't be here.
Well, that's true. Sarah, you're not wrong. Like, that shit is not okay. And you know, you said at the beginning of the pod, like, we are hard on this team, but I don't think it's being hard on this team to want that. And like, that's the expectation and the bar that the program is set for itself, is to never get out hustled, to never get outworked. And then when you see it, and unfortunately, sometimes when you see it from an outsider, like he's not anymore, but
this team for 3 years at this point, like, you know what the mission is.
You just like narrow in on it even harder. Everyone, it's like, it just reinforces like these negative feelings sometimes. And, you know, it's so easy to, you know, pick on certain plays, but I think you're right. Those are the plays that stick out to a Michigan State fan, maybe more so than.
And you could make an argument that he's in the starting lineup for an offensive quality. You know, he is a better 3-point shooter than maybe Julius Marble.
No, absolutely.
But he's not that good. Like, when you.
Yeah. And I guess that's
breaking a three from the logo. Why did you take a logo three, Joseph? Please help us. help you.
The full first name, you know, he's
He's in big trouble. I also wonder, like, as I reflect on my own feelings about Joey Hauser, I think to myself, like, am I more critical of him because he was like a highly touted transfer? Like, people were hype when we got him.
If he was from southeastern Louisiana, maybe you don't feel as.
And if there wasn't, like, remember the Hauser sweepstakes where everybody was like, oh, where are they going to go?
Yeah,
there was all hype about like where they were going to end up. And then his first season when he didn't get the NCAA waiver to play.
We were mad.
We were pissed. Everybody was pissed.
Everybody was mad. Yeah.
But we were also, I think, extremely hurt that year. Was that the Final Four year?
Well.
Yes. Sorry. So, well, forget I even said that. Take it back.
Sorry?
Forget that that came out of my mouth. But Michigan State was very banged up that year. And so we were like, another body.
Mm-hmm.
We would like
it. As it turns out, it's just a body. It's not a player. And
well, like, that I will say this. I will go to bat for one thing.
Okay.
I do think that Joey Hauser will, in certain situations, excel. We saw it when he plays a team like Wisconsin. When that style comes out, it's Joey Hauser time. When it's a different style that is maybe un-Wisconsin-y, it's not Joey Hauser time.
Side note, real quick on Wisconsin, I just got to butt in here. Brad Davison got a flop warning in his first game today. Also, he's still at Wisconsin. You're welcome. Back to Joey Hauser.
Is he 25-2?
Yeah, at minimum.
Not like
job.
He get a flop warning.
Get a job.
Not only did he get a flop warning, he got a flop warning in the first 10 minutes of the game.
Woo!
10 minutes into college basketball season, injected. Brad Davison is in these streets.
Straight into my veins.
That, you know what the worst part is? Is that's going to be on ESPN's front page.
Yeah.
It's just, and you know what the worst part is? We'll all click and be like,
oh, we're
I want to see it.
Show me.
Oh.
Anyway.
To put a button on the Joey Hauser thing, I agree with Curbs. I think that he definitely can have a role on this team. I think that he's a good rebounder. Offensively, he can get it done. But to your point, he does not do some things. He's slow getting back on defense. You know, that's problematic. His shot selection, not great. And he starts. If he was coming off the bench, I would probably be less annoyed about the whole thing. But he's in the starting five at Michigan State, and
you
gotta
there
be
are expectations.
Yeah.
There are expectations, and so put him on the bench, and I'm less.
One player we haven't talked about, which I find interesting, is Gabe Brown.
Hmm.
What do you make of Gabe?
Well, let's back up. The fact that we didn't talk about him.
Yeah.
And it's minute whatever of the podcast is an indictment in itself.
Yeah. And he's one too where I love him so much. I think he's so fun. He clearly loves Michigan State and the school, and fans love him, and he brings the excitement and all of these things, but I still want more from him as a senior. He's a senior, right?
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't be an afterthought in a game like this. I love that AJ had a great game, but I don't want to have to rely on AJ Hogard to be our leading scorer every game. I see that being more of a position where Gabe plugs in. That's why he's so electric and he can create so much, but also he can be wild out there, which maybe, is a little bit of a detriment. But the fact that we don't really have anything to say about him in a game of this magnitude, be with the opponent, I'm concerned. Again, I'm not, it's the first game. We're going to figure things out. We rarely win these early big ones. Fine. But I want more from him. I want that for him too, right? This is an audition, for the rest of what your basketball career could look like. So I want him to play his best. And I just don't think we got that tonight.
And you hope it's to come. But there are flashes. And it seems like that's the problem, is their flashes. That's not him. You want that to just be him. And you saw it with the block. That was a foul that really seemed to kind of turn things. I think he got benched, the Izzo 2-foul bench.
Yep.
And then back to disappearing. And then showing up late when maybe, I don't want to say it's too late, but it's too late.
It was too late. Yeah, let's be clear. It was too late at that point. Kansas knew. They just had to press a little and we were turning the ball over. It was or not even at all. Sometimes we were just bouncing it off of our own feet. They knew at that point. And as a senior captain, this is a game where we need you and we need you to be relevant through the whole thing, even with that 2-foul benching. You can earn your way back on the floor. So not a great game from our guy Gabe.
the thing about Gabe is that's frustrating is like he has the flashes, but he also has all the tools, right? He has the height. He has the athleticism. We know that he can shoot. It's just like where, and honestly, maybe they just need to like separate him and Marcus before the games because I feel like both of them come out so ramped up. You know what I mean? Gabe actually does too much. He tries too hard. He like doesn't let the game come to him. So like maybe let's like buddy Gabe up with Christy and then like buddy Marky up with Malik Hall, who are like
the I was gonna say like, yeah, give him like Malik, who's like so yeah, even keeled.
You know, let's get some let's not let those two like get each other totally over a barrel or because they both have the same problem. They come out and they're trying really hard to whatever level of success. And then like the second half starts and it's like, what happened to Bingham? What happened to Gabe? Like where, even if they're on the floor, it's like, where are they? What are they doing? And that's frustrating. They both have it.
They have it. And that's the problem. You're frustrated. And we're all frustrated because it's there and you just want to see it a little more consistently. And as a senior, you're hoping that that would be the time, but the team does have to move on. So do we. And they will on Friday against
Western. Good transition, Curbs. Good transition.
Thank you. The Broncos. Not a great Broncos team, folks. This is a team picked near the bottom of the Mid-American Conference. But there are some additions that you might remember from last year and some fun facts about them as well. The Artis White, point guard last year, had 19 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists. But more importantly, a social media star, I hear.
So I Googled B. Artis last year when he was doing a boo-boo-y to Michigan State in this game. And he has 1.4 million followers on TikTok.
Wow.
Which that's is insane. And like,
a lot. And he plays for Western. It's not like he's like at UNC. You know what I mean? Like it's just, as a millennial who's on TikTok every day, I don't understand.
See, and I don't subscribe to TikTok. My theory on it is if the video is good enough, it will find me. So I don't need that in my life. So I'm just wondering, like, what does he do on there that gets him that many followers? I'm not going to look. Again, if he's good enough, it will find me. But I just want to put that out there. I don't understand.
It's some basketball content. It's like some dance content. He's just like kind of a good looking guy, which, you know, it seems to be on TikTok. If you can find the right spot in the algorithm and you're like kind of good looking, you can get a lot of followers, but
I hope he can make some money on it now. That's what I hope for him. Like get that TikTok cash. Also don't cash in against us again this year because I hated it last year. And I hated the fact that they had to say his full name every time. B. Artis White. It wasn't just like, and White hits another three. It was the full name every time, which really drove me nuts when he was lighting this up.
I wonder if that has to do with the algorithm. It's a nice name. It's like an author. You know,
yeah.
Maybe it catches the eye when you're scrolling through. I don't know. Something there. Titus Wright, 6'8", power forward. He had a career high last year against Michigan State, 16. I would like to think that if Marcus Bingham can do well against bargain bin Dwight Howard, he can lock up Titus Wright. Do we feel that way? Do we feel like that can happen?
I hope that everyone.
I need more positivity.
Sorry, spin zone.
I hope that everyone goes into this game and realizes that they are not playing Kansas and that they are like, oh yeah, we are good at basketball, and they decide to be good at basketball. Like, that's what I hope. I hope that everyone remembers that they are good at basketball, and so and obviously they're capable, right? I do not want them to allow another 19 points to the TikTok star and 16 points to Titus Wright. I can't say their names together. They're too similar. Okay. So that's, yes, they can, and they will, and they should, but, you know, we have a tendency to do stupid things.
If there's ever a nice warm-up for Maryland, the football game, this would be a tune-up. Everyone can get the good vibes going, hopefully, into Saturday's game. But before we start to talk football, so some things happened, good things, bad things, and everyone in between. We're going to take a commercial break. We're going to try to. We're going to try to take a commercial break. And so this is how we do it. We just say 3, 2, 1, and then we're quiet for a while. So then I can find that part on the podcast. That's a peek behind the curtain, everybody.
We're ready.
In 3, 2, 1. And we're back.
Wow. Yeah. That was magical. I hope it was a good commercial, everyone.
Yeah, sometimes I've heard that there are some things that maybe I wouldn't personally endorse, but who knows?
We've got no control here.
I have no control
over anything, really. Yeah, really.
So, guys, we promised everyone we're going to stay away from the true doom and gloom. There can be some doom, but not doom and gloom. Okay. Michigan State did lose in West Lafayette, 40-29, the first blemish on the dream season's record. And, you know, it's a bummer. It's not great. But is it that bad? You guys tell me.
So I will note that it was like maybe half an hour before kickoff when Sarah and I agreed to come on and do the pod this week. And Sarah and I don't think we have ever discussed a win.
I don't think so.
I think it's us, but it might be us.
We are implying that, which is troublesome considering, you know, we like when we pop on here. And I was worried when I saw that message from you, John, that like we're going to send it, you know, this is going to be a bad situation. And it is, but I will say this, it's not as bad as the Northwestern basketball game we had to cover last year. So spin zone, not so bad, not so bad. Yep. Listen, nobody wants to lose to Purdue. I'll say it. I'm comfortable saying that. But if you're going to lose to Purdue, you might as well just like completely show your ass. Can I swear? I did. Sorry about that. Because that's what we did here. And I think it was kind of, it wasn't anything new, to be honest with you. The issues that we had in this game were issues that we'd had all season, but had managed to escape, I guess, from the other games. And also like, it's not the end of the season. I think there are a couple things that everybody keeps saying, but like, we're all going to keep repeating it as a fan base because it's important.
Very.
All of our goals are still in front of us.
Yes.
Okay. That's number one.
We love
number that. Number two, we were supposed to win 4 games this year. Okay. We've got 8. Also, recall the 2015 Nebraska loss.
I'd rather not, but I
don't have, I don't like it.
We don't want to. Just remember, we also lost that game and, you know, we ended up okay. So it's not the end of the world. Nobody wanted to watch that game happen and we all kind of saw it looming in the distance, right? Like this is a possibility. Purdue does this. This is Purdue's favorite activity is
the only reason for existing.
The only one, the big drum and upsetting top 5 football teams. That is it for Purdue. They've got nothing else.
They got an engineering school, I guess.
Whatever, we're not giving them credit for that. This is what they do, and they did it. So, you know, here we are.
I think it's funny because I feel like this loss, in a lot of ways, is like Michigan State getting out Michigan State-ed in some ways. Like, I think John and Austin mentioned a couple weeks ago that, like, that scrappy underdog thing is MSU's brand, and I'm sure it's very annoying to everyone else. It is also Purdue's brand, especially
it's like
football.
Just way worse.
Way worse.
Way scrappy.
But like Sarah said, this is their brand. They come in with a big chip on their shoulder, and like this is where they live. This is what they do. I think the other thing about this game is like kind of what Sarah said. This Michigan State team, and I'm not afraid to say it, is deeply flawed in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah.
Deeply.
Big, huge flaws. And this is how you can tell I'm not a Michigan fan, but I am a Michigan State fan, I will say.
Yes! Yes.
This team is deeply flawed. And up until this point, they've had enough talent to overcome the deep flaws. And what was different about this game? One, injuries. A lot of injuries to very important people.
Yeah.
Not having Speedy Naylor. Not having a starting left tackle. Not having your field goal kicker.
Your kicker. Our beautiful Ginger Prince.
That was
okay, but that one, I like that happened in warmups. So like your freshman kicker,
no way to prepare for it,
who has a club on his hand because everybody's hand is broken.
What activity was he doing?
I don't.
How does that even like come up?
Practicing karate in our spare time.
I'm telling you, I'm worried about the keep chopping metaphor. All you see on the sidelines is Tucker. Chopping. guys, we don't need to chop so hard that we all break hands. We don't need that. Not right now. Not like this. Speedy, we need you. Two hands. Well, we don't know that he broke his hand, but like all assumption is that he's
Al Halliday club.
I mean, he can play with a club because that's fine. He can go out there and Jason Pierre-Paul people, but
nobody knows what Maddie's injury is, right? And we won't know, probably.
Oh, never.
I'd like him to come back.
So, but the other thing about this game, so injuries.
Yeah, injuries. Check.
The other thing about this game is that Purdue has the unfortunate combination of a decent to good quarterback and one of the best receivers in the Big Ten, if not the country.
David Bell continues to
David Bell.
continues to haunt me. He had 11 catches, 217 yards. Guys, they're going to throw to David Bell. I don't know. I'm just going to say it. That's what they're going to do.
So, you know, sorry, I'm going to slander Michigan again here because I think.
Welcome.
Purdue had 536 passing yards, which is absurd. But I think what we saw in Michigan is that they had, 420-some passing yards, and they also had a crazy number of passing yards. And what they didn't have was a receiver of Bell's caliber. Mm-hmm. And Cade McNamara couldn't get it done in crunch time, right? That's just a fact. That's not slander. So, you know, this game was pretty much the worst case scenario in a bunch of ways. Purdue has a great defense. They have incredibly good passing threats. Michigan State had a bunch of injuries. They're on the road. It was the week after the Michigan game. I would like to see stats on the game MSU plays after the Michigan game.
I think I read something that we're like 11-3 after the Michigan game. Like the stats are surprisingly positive for us. And again, we don't fact check here. I may have made that up, but I'm pretty sure that's what I saw. That like generally,
that's just my personal opinion. That every time we lose after we beat Michigan, I just feel it very acutely.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, and here's the other thing is, you know, I think my weird take on this one is Purdue is the perfect problem for this team. You know, the injuries certainly compounded that. This scheme, both Michigan State and Purdue are the opposite. This is bad news for us. It's the worst matchup we can have. It's fine when you play an air raid that can't play defense, Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, there you go. Mm-hmm. And it's a problem when you play an air raid because this scheme is predicated on saying, hey, other team, college quarterback, throw the ball 50 times. And can you win the game throwing the ball 50 times? Some can. That kid from Western Kentucky was very comfortable doing that.
Yes.
You know, CJ Stroud.
I'm going to say his name because it's great.
Yeah. Any reason to say that. Any reason. Aiden O'Connell, he's used to throwing the ball 45 to 50 times a game. He's not great, but that's what they do. So they're not wasting rushing downs against Michigan State's stout defense. Like, they don't waste downs. Mm-hmm. And Michigan State's defense is just like, hey, you can throw on us all day. If your quarterback can beat us, great. There aren't too many quarterbacks that can beat us because we have a great offense. And it was like the perfectly wrong combo, it felt like.
I will say the one thing that really bothered me was that it appeared that tackling was optional more times than I would like.
Yeah.
You haven't seen a lot of misses like that this year, right? It just seemed like they'd get there and then they'd let him go. Like, the quarterback, and this is just going to be like, it felt like he escaped like four times and then had a massive pass to David Bell. And it was just like, guys, all you had to do was tackle him and it was over, right?
That so flicker or double reverse or whatever it was.
Yeah,
they had him stopped maybe like 20 yards from the line of scrimmage and nothing. And that one was the one where I was like, this is, you know, you're watching a game and like things are going not great, but they're not terrible. And then sometimes it's just like, and then there's just sometimes something that breaks you. That was it for me. I was just,
You know, so I think that my point of view, I think, wonder if you guys think about this, is that Michigan State's coaching staff came in. And they had a roster that was not elite. And they've created a scheme that is allowing them to win 8 out of 9 games. And the only things that it's vulnerable against are elite teams, which every scheme is if you don't have talent. So no big deal.
Yeah.
And an air raid attack with an above average defense. I think that's okay. There aren't too many teams that are air raid and plus defense. So, like,
listen, Sarah and I survived the John L. Smith era. So, like, somebody coming in and in year two with, as John is fond of saying, the second worst team he's
the
ever
second
had.
Worst team. Yeah.
And being 8-1 and beating Michigan and, you know, still having anything you would want to get in front of you on the schedule, not a problem. Very much not a problem.
Yeah, and I just want to note that even against a team in air raid with a plus defense, Michigan State, if you look at the averages, Purdue was 7 for 7 in the red zone. They average going 77% during the year in the red zone. Michigan State averages giving up 87% of the time points in the red zone. So if you average that out, Purdue probably should have gone 6 out of 7 on a normal game. They went 7 out of 7. They made great plays and they won the game. That's not saying, hey, if, but when. It's just stats. So if they went 6 out of 7, like a normal day, Michigan State has the ball to either tie or win. And that's not to say they should have won. It's just to say that even against that scheme, still, you can still win.
And can I say, my partner said this during the game. I saw it on Twitter. When Michigan State was down 16 in the fourth quarter, is there honestly anyone among us who was not like, well,
right where we want them.
Right where we want them.
No problem here.
And, and having survived the zero offense years, right, I think that being in that position where you think, oh, your team can score, your team has the ability to contest this game, is a huge leap. And it's not something that all teams can say when they're down 16 points, you know, or when they're down 10 points or when they're down, you know, whatever. So I think that was really positive. Another weird thing I want to talk about from this game, why is Michigan State so good at 2-point conversions?
That is a good question.
I think they have a lot of offensive weapons, and I think they practice them. That was a story after the Michigan game, but like,
3 for 3.
Real good at them.
And none of them were just like, give the ball to Kenneth Walker, which would be a very
which would be great. Play. Yeah.
They're like actual plays.
I know.
I mean, speaking of our Heisman guy, our little Heisman hopeful, it wasn't a bad game from him. 146 yards and one touchdown. Like, that's pretty good. I mean, it's not 5 touchdowns, which, as you recall,
it's not a game that's going to tank a Heisman campaign. Like, when you're looking at his numbers and you're looking at a Heisman campaign, you're not circling this game. You're circling the freaking Nebraska game where he had like 61 yards. You know, so he played great.
I guess I just feel hyper aware of it because it's like to even have somebody in contention as a Michigan State athlete, you know, for Heisman candidate, it's just like they're watching us with an extra microscope, right? Because they want to write him out. They don't want us to have a Heisman winner. But.
The people who are also in it is Matt Corral, right? Ole Miss lost to Auburn, you know, which is whatever. Auburn's not a bad team, but it's also not like – he didn't play great. There's the guy from Pitt. What's his name? Kenny Pickford.
Kenny Pickett.
Pickett. What? Is that really his name?
I feel like Kenny Pickford is somebody else. Again, no fact.
Anyway, this is a digression. Anyway, there's that guy. He's good. I mean, we're not saying any of these people are bad. It's just not a year where you have, like, a absolutely crazy, dominant, you know, Trevor Lawrence or, you know, a quarterback or receiver who's out there, like, absolutely the best player in college football. So, like, the last couple weeks are going to determine a lot, but I definitely think that Walker is still in the conversation. He hasn't put himself out.
Absolutely.
And this loss absolutely does not put him out.
There's no one else.
The conversation. That's essentially what I'm saying. Who else are you going to give it to?
Exactly.
Deshaun Robinson?
We were talking, I think I was talking with Sheehan and Will Hunter about this, and we said, would this be the year that they just say Georgia D-line? Just
I mean, that's fair. Like, and if they decided to do that, I would allow it because Georgia is so good. So,
and there's been many years when the Heisman has deserved to go to a defensive player, like Ndamukong Suh comes to mind, Aaron Donald, I don't know. Like, and they never give it to a defensive player. Charles Woodson had to return kicks to get the Heisman, you know? Like, so if they want to give it to a linebacker from, I can't, here's the one name that I don't know. The guy from Georgia who's really good, if they want to give it to that guy, the scariest linebacker in college football, that's fine. I'm good with that. That's who deserves it. But
I think we're going to see, you know, not that you would ever endanger a win with individual stats, but I think they go hand in hand. The more Kenneth Walker touches the ball, the more unlikely we're going to win. And we got away from that in the Purdue game.
Yeah.
We're playing from behind a little bit, so I kind of get it. But, you know, Kenneth Walker, I think, only had like 5 carries in the second half. And you feel
that's
like
that's not great.
That's not enough for if you got a Heisman candidate.
And the other thing about Walker is, like, when you look at his stats, when you look at, like, if you talk about, like, Bijan Robinson or the running backs for Michigan, we also have, like, an incredibly good passing attack and several very good receivers. Like, his touchdown numbers are not as high as some other people because, sometimes we throw touchdowns, you know? So, like, when you look at his component of the offense, you know, you have to he doesn't carry the whole offense all the time. And, like, you know, maybe he showed a little bit more. We also say
I do wonder
they should run other plays than give it to Kenneth Walker. But.
Yeah. I do wonder that now. Like, not that we don't have, like, other capable receivers now that Speedy is out, but I do wonder if they adjust a little bit and go back to running more with K-9. Trey Mosley played great, and then Montori Foster was also excellent. I enjoyed him out there, but I guess, like, you know, you're taking a little bit of a step down when you lose Speedy. Like, that's just a fact because Peyton is so comfortable with him and with Reed. Did you know they went to high school together? That's important. So I do wonder, like, what we adjust now. Like, if they know for sure that Speedy's out for the rest of the year, cool. Let's see if we go back to Kenneth and try and run it. I'm less worried about offense, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to find a way. I worry about, you know, what the defense does from here. Like, you know, third downs, that was a problem in this game. That was a problem. And there were some heinous penalties, to be clear. And this isn't really the targeting. Like, that is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's the penalties on punting, you know? That was
right. To be clear, we're not talking about bad calls. We're talking about penalties that are stupid.
Penalties that are stupid on my team. I'm not criticizing the officials.
No. Procedural penalties, illegal motions, false starts, like pre-snap procedural shit that is just execution.
So easy. Like, we're in week 10.
The illegal motion one that negated the
oh my god, the beautiful punt,
incredible punt, incredible save by the special teams unit, like. You gave up 50 yards of field position there. Like, you just gave it away. You got nothing in return for it. You just gave it away. By being
What do we attribute that to? Like, why is that still happening? For a coach who preaches
discipline,
we're missing a piece here. Like, somebody's not getting it. Because that's dumb shit. Like, the targeting is subjective, right? Like, officials are going to call that either way. Not a whole lot you can do, you know. Pass interference to me is also very subjective, like, whatever. But, like, just some of those penalties are so stupid that it's just, like, in a game like that when you're not playing your best and Purdue came to play, you can't afford any of that. None of it, you know? So I think that's where my concern is. Like, where do you adjust from here? What answers do you have? Mm-hmm. And it's not like we're having fewer injuries. Like, our corner situation is bleak. Right? Like, and it was already not spectacular. So, you know, the speculation now, of course, is that Brantley is out for the year. Nobody has said for sure. But, you know, Curbs, you pointed out the Instagram post he made about getting ready for year two, which when you're in the middle of year one, that doesn't feel great. You know,
how can we find the word adversity? Again, not good.
Not good news.
The signs are not good.
Yeah, and Mel Tucker, you know, injuries, which probably a good thing. You know, it's just like keep it close to the vest. No advantages for the other team, but you know, sometimes you say things without saying things, and it's unfortunate. You said it's thin. It is. We might see some people who've never seen a lot of field time in three very critical games coming up. So even more pressure on the offense, you know, to keep up. But, you know, enough about this Purdue. I mean, we don't have to do this anymore.
No.
We don't.
I think it's we can all agree we hate losing. It's not the end of the world. We can answer on Saturday by tipping some turtles. We're going to tip them turtles. You're welcome.
Before then, let's take a walk around the country and the Big Ten. We had a bunch of fun games. I don't know if you guys had a chance to tune into any of them, but the first one, I didn't see any of it, but I was enthralled. I was game casting, and it was one of those where you couldn't get a lot of alerts when you had the score alert, because there weren't any. Auburn at Texas A&M, it was 3-3 at halftime. And I got to tell you, the SEC gets way too much credit.
Too much credit. I'm sick of it. If that was a Big Ten game.
Team teams.
Yeah, top 15. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Auburn, number 12 in the country, scored 3 points. Is that correct? Is that the
title? Yeah. And it's kind of unacceptable. Like, come on. We need a little better from that. And I don't know if it even ultimately matters, because these are teams that, you know, don't matter in the scheme of the playoff. But it's just like, you know, it's just these types of the games for the narrative is like, oh, look how deep the SEC is. Yeah. But if insert, you know, Illinois and Ohio, any other Purdue, then it's like, God, that conference is garbage.
Would you recall a 9 overtime Illinois football game, for example, which was the best football game in the world and the worst football game? But in the SEC, that would have been the best football game, hands down.
Ever. Or even if it's two, like, bigger name Big Ten teams, like Wisconsin and Iowa, let's say, and it's 3-3 at halftime, it would be like, oh, there's no offense in the Big Ten. Exactly. I went to a bar and watched Alabama play LSU in a game that ended up being 9-6. Like,
national championship.
And if that happened in the Big Ten, it would just be nothing but, oh, this conference is so out of date, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So the SEC sometimes is wrong. They get so much credit because Alabama is unbeatable.
And I get it. Like, I understand why they get the credit. Alabama wins every year, whatever, whatever. But I'll tell you, I'm sick of it. And that's what I'm going to say.
They're on watch. So San Diego State was the favorite team of the pod. We've moved on since their loss. The new favorite team is the UTSA Roadrunners, not to be confused with the USTA, which was unfortunately labeled by BARDA, the playoff committee host. And it's like, dude, you didn't. Not only did you not rank them, you got their initials
wrong. You disrespected their name, guys. Really, really. Come on.
But the Roadrunners are 9-0. And they beat the best. They beat Illinois. They also beat UTEP by 21 last week, and that was a good UTEP team, a team with two losses. Good being a relative term, obviously. Sure. But I think at the very least, these guys deserve to be ranked. Were they? I did the playoff rankings.
I'm looking now because I knew. Yeah, they're 20. No, who are you talking about? I missed. UTSA, yeah, they're 23, right?
Vindicate.
Under San Diego State.
Correct. That's what we need.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm happy. That's all we need. And you know what? Keep on marching, Roadrunners.
We support you.
I'd like to see it. Did you guys catch the North Carolina Wake Forest score?
Yes, I did.
I saw the end of it because it was on before our game. Score should be illegal. Like, this score, this is a basketball score.
It's incredible. 50-55 North Carolina win over previously undefeated Wake Forest. You'd like to think if they had Kenneth Walker on their team, they would have had a few more points.
Okay, could have made a difference.
And we say that in jest, but like, what is happening at Wake Forest?
They run do they run a triple option? They run some crazy offensive scheme, and he just wasn't getting like the
they,
yeah. He's, I mean, he. he has called that out, that like they weren't running a scheme that worked for him and whatever. But like really what I know about Wake Forest is, has anybody watched the show QB1 on Netflix? Because it features the Wake Forest quarterback, Sam Hartman. And so I know an extraordinary amount about his life. That's not for this podcast. But fascinating story. I recommend checking it out. So I do check in on Wake Forest every once in a while to see what he's up to. Turns out scoring a lot of points. So good for him. But yeah, that game was wild. It was just like absolutely no defense. Nobody cared. It was like, well, we're just going to score again. And then the scoring stopped for Wake Forest, which was unfortunate. You can't win many games when you can't score anymore. And then UNC out of nowhere was just like, okay, cool. We'll take over from here, and just started scoring all of the points. That's expert analysis that you can't pay for.
Yeah, that was incredible. I feel like I was there.
Do you think if anyone cared about UNC football that they would find this team frustrating? Because I feel like UNC does this. Like they pretend to be good and they're not.
I don't think anybody cares there, which is why they hired somebody like Mac Brown, right? Because it's like, it literally doesn't matter what he does as long as they have a basketball team, and they'll have a basketball team for the rest of eternity, right?
Like Northwestern.
Yeah.
But with a basketball team.
Yeah, exactly. But like, it's a name, and people were like, oh, this football name, he's coming to coach us. Amazing. And then nobody knows what they do. Nobody has any idea if they had a game, if they won, if they lost. Nobody cares. He's living the dream, honestly, as a football coach.
The best job. Yeah.
Is that where Mitch Trubisky went?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's about on the nose, though, right?
I feel like that's the end of
that's the end, and we're moving on.
So, fun fact about Mac Brown. He was the head coach at North Carolina from 1988 to 1997.
Yikes.
And then went to Texas. And people like to say that he is currently pulling a Texas at North Carolina, but he originated it at North Carolina. You know,
nobody is ever asking if UNC football is back.
Right. Exactly. Right. They are just talented and loud, but not actually doing it.
Sure. Okay. Yep. I like that. Yeah.
So, man, North Carolina, they always seem to be on the cusp. They have Sam Howell. He's a first round pick, allegedly. Just like
really?
Yes. So who knows?
That works out for whoever reaches too far and
the Lions. The Lions are picking him up.
Bite your tongue. No one deserves that.
12-ranked Baylor went in to play Texas Christian. This game was relevant, not just because Texas Christian upset Baylor 30-28, but Gary Patterson quit right before the game.
Yeah.
This would be like if D'Antonio quit right before the game. Like, he would have been there for a long time and had made TCU relevant, had some good years, and TCU's quarterback was out. So they pulled it together. Big up.
MSU played TCU in a bowl not that long ago.
Oh, yeah. Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl.
They won from that?
Connor Cook's first.
Lost, right?
No, they won the game. 17.
They broke in the fourth quarter, and he pulled it out, showing signs of what he would become.
Exactly.
How did I forget?
Our friend Connor.
Okay.
We were discussing the 2014 season earlier, and apparently Sarah and I forgot the entire season. So you can be excused for forgetting the 2012 Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl or whatever. So,
there is a final game that the Sarahs were adamant we add, and I need to learn a little bit more. San Diego State's punter did something.
Listen, it's not even about the game. It is specifically about the punter. And, like, again, if I had really been doing my research, I would learn how to pronounce his name, but I didn't. His name is Matt Erazia, I think. Great. He had a 79-yard punt. Like, and it's chaos. They and Hawaii set up a returner at the 30 and then another returner at the 10 just to see, you know, like just to have it covered, depending on how far he kicked. And it went over both of them. Both of them. I mean, we all know, punt to win.
Hero.
Punt to win. And that's where they are. What a hero.
Legend.
Yeah, exactly. So he's my new favorite player. Sorry to all the Michigan State fellas, but I've moved on to a punter.
I was asking if he has any eligibility and if we could get Mel on the phone to talk him into jumping in the transfer portal because
jumping. I love it.
You know what, though? Bryce Behringer has done a great job, but just unfortunately for him, there is like this Herculean punter.
It should be illegal unless he plays for my team, in which case, good for you, sir. That's so anyway, that's all I wanted to say about that. I was so hyped to read about him.
So let's jump to other very Big Ten things like punting. Let's jump through the results this past weekend. Ohio State went to Nebraska. You thought Scott Frost was maybe coaching for his job?
Nope.
Apparently not.
All Ohio his State assistants wins. Were, though.
Yeah, there you go. Ohio State wins 26-17. And Scotty Frost gets another year, but as you mentioned, Sarah, I don't think anyone else did.
No, I think they fired all of his assistants, right?
How? Which, they still have like two more games to go.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what do you do now? Like, yeah, there are other assistant coaches on the team, but like, how is that going to help anything right now? Right? I
if
remain
you're
convinced.
Nebraska, is there anything that's helping this season? Like, no. Sarah and I were texting this game when it was happening, and like, first of all, Ohio State needs to stop messing around and making me think that somebody can beat them. And the other thing is, how frustrating is it if you're a Nebraska fan? Because they've made every team they've played look bad to average, you know? And yet, they have won no games.
I know.
None games. And it's just like, how do you keep your job if you're Scott Frost after a thing like that? How do you convince the AD, who's been there since July, that like, next year,
it's going to be fine.
This is Nebraska football. It's Lucy with the freaking football and Charlie Brown, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, enough football is going to get yanked away and Nebraska's going to stink on ice again. And like, that's it.
Yeah.
Nebraska's a fraud. Like, as a program.
Can you call a program a fraud if they don't win?
Here's my thing. They came into the Big Ten and it was all like, oh, Nebraska is going to dominate
history.
The anchor of this division, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. They stink.
It's
they
true.
Freaking stink, and they have stinked ever since the day they came to the Big Ten.
It's true.
Stinked?
Correct. Stinked. Oh. We're going to allow it.
I have a master's degree in a writing-based discipline.
Illinois went to the cities and took down the Gophers 14-6. I don't even know what to say. Like, Minnesota controlled its own destiny. Out of the path to Indianapolis, they just couldn't do this.
Look, CJ Fleck got a big fat check and said, see you losers later. Like, figure it out yourselves. Like,
the Big Ten West is infuriating.
It's so maddening. Like, it's just, do you think they'll ever do something about these divisions?
No, I don't think so, but.
You'd think they'd have to. But here's the thing. You look across the head-to-heads, and I believe the Big Ten West has a better record. Against Big Ten East this year. It's so, I mean.
Is Purdue in the Big Ten West now? Yes.
Yeah.
Purdue is really dragging that average up.
Well, they are certainly helping the cause. But then, you know, everyone's beating up on Nebraska and Northwestern, but, you know, it's not like the Big Ten East doesn't have Indiana, who's 2-7. You know?
Poor Indiana. RIP to that story.
Yeah.
The problem is not the bottom half of the two divisions, it's the top half. You know,
there's not a lot of elite.
And you look at the East and you've got Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. And then you look at the West and you've got, you know, the Gophers who can't stop screwing up long enough to like win the division. And that's like always the story over there. It's like somebody messes around and ends up the Big Ten West champion. And it's like, and they're always, there was that 1 year Michigan State beat Iowa where Iowa wasn't terrible.
Right.
But
that's
like,
the nicest
that's the
thing.
Best you can say, yeah.
Hey, they weren't terrible. Yeah.
I that's would give up the Michigan game every year to play in the Big Ten West.
Illinois threw the ball 10 times this game. It was certainly.
And they won.
They won. They did. Something only a mother could love. Wisconsin went to Rutgers and won 52-3. Wisconsin is rolling right now.
I thought Wisconsin was dead. I should have known better.
And that's one of the worst offenses. I mean, I haven't watched Wisconsin in a couple weeks, but the last time I watched them, I was like, this is one of the worst offenses I have ever seen. 52 points. Rutgers.
they figured it out. And, you know, it's all this defense of theirs is right up there with, like, Georgia.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to very good.
I don't want to say they are at that level, but they get to talk about being in the same stratosphere. And I'm just astonished that these guys just have been carrying this. You mentioned their offense is so bad, but now the offense is just simply below average. And yeah. Look at what they're doing.
Right.
And Oof. That in itself is you start to look across ahead to Indianapolis, you start to say, is it just going to be Ohio State, Wisconsin again?
And
that's a little frustrating. Yeah. But then at the same time, you start to ask yourself, could this Wisconsin team and that defense compete, you know, with an Ohio State? And you could maybe.
When you look at the Michigan State teams that have beaten Ohio State, right, that's how they did it, right? That's you win with and against a team like that with an incredibly elite defense. And so people are asking. It's what we can say.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I mean, I don't know. No one was ever asking Graham Mertz to throw for 300 yards a game.
I didn't hear it.
Not one person. And all they needed is just to be competent. And here they come, the Badgers, you know. So yeah.
I think that the question about that division is just like, who wants to win? Who's going to screw up the least? And I think when it comes to Wisconsin, they have a tendency to screw up less than the other teams in contention in this division. They're steady. They're like a buying stock in like oil. You know, it's just gonna
be. Yeah.
It's just gonna do what it does.
Yeah.
Penn State went to Maryland College Park, won 31-14 in a game that was closer than the score appears. If you had Maryland 10.5, so sorry. Penn State scored on a basically 80-yardish interception return for a touchdown as time expired. So you were golden if you had Maryland because it was supposed to be – it was really 24-14. And in the fourth quarter, it was a one-possession game. So it looks bad. So there are a couple takeaways here. Is Penn State, you know, maybe what we thought they were? Or then they turned around and played well against Ohio State. You know, are they good? Are they bad? Is Maryland as bad as they are? I still can't get a read on these guys.
Yeah, I've got I don't have a whole lot to offer to the analysis of this game, except for like, for Penn State, a healthy Sean Clifford like changes their entire universe, right? Like we saw what they look like when they don't have him, and yikes, guys. But I don't have much more to say than that. Like, Penn State is an entirely different team when he's involved.
Yeah. I have some notes on this game for when we talk about Maryland that I'm going to save. But, yeah, I think Sean Clifford is the best quarterback in the Big Ten. And, yeah, he's in the conversation, right? And so, like, him being healthy obviously makes a huge difference. I do think it's funny, though, to watch them in the Ohio State game and be like, this is the team that couldn't score in 9 overtimes.
Right.
Against Illinois. At home.
Against Illinois. Yeah.
At home. If you have ever been to Beaver Stadium, not scoring in 9 overtimes at Beaver Stadium it's insane. There's 110,000 people there. Like, it's crazy.
It's hard. You know, speaking of hard to do, Iowa and Northwestern, the Hawkeyes won 17-12, which is a very Big Ten score, if I do say so myself.
Yeah.
15 total punts for all you punt fans there. Iowa played their backup quarterback in this game. They've moved on from Spencer Petras and onto their QB2. I don't know if this is the result they were hoping for. Some Iowa fans are saying they thought it was better than before. If this is better, okay.
Remember when they were ranked number 2?
That was a sad little time in our lives.
Right? Like, how did that even happen?
We all just kind of got out of hand.
I think that we all includes people who have not watched Iowa for years.
Yeah, because I think that's true.
In this corner of the world, we were all a little down on frisky Iowa.
It was a little too much dip on their chip. Felt like.
Definition of too much dip on the chip was number 2 Iowa.
Like we knew, but to your point, Sarah, like I don't know if everyone in California and maybe like the East Coast really like knew what they were getting themselves into.
Not familiar with Kirk Ferentz.
Mm-hmm. No. Not familiar with his work. No.
College football.
The final game, Michigan went to Indiana and won 29-7. This was a standard Michigan game. Squeeze the life out of a team with a bad quarterback. But these aren't the games that define Jim Harbaugh. And there are a couple to come.
Good for you. Although, do you remember when Indiana was, like, kind of good and it was during the Rich Rod era and those games would be, like,
yes.
Like Forest North Carolina game? I missed that. That was great.
Kevin Wilson.
Like, 58-52 you know, or whatever. Yeah. Great stuff.
Fun times. Yeah, now they're dropping 7 points. This can't be fun.
No.
So here are the upcoming national games. We don't have the rank. I don't have the rankings in front of me quite yet, but they should be fairly top 25. Oklahoma at Baylor. This might be the best team Oklahoma has played yet.
Allegedly.
Oklahoma is 8 and Baylor is 13. Baylor did just lose.
They did, but they only dropped maybe one.
One spot,
which is surprising. That just kind of maybe speaks to the depth of the entire.
Yeah, and I'm just seeing Oklahoma at 9-0 is only 8, which I think, I don't know, people are done with Oklahoma.
Which is odd. They're a blue blood. You know, you'd think that they'd just get in by name brand, but, you know, they do have 3 straight games against ranked opponents, I think, that if they win all 3, you'd like to think that they'd probably have a case for the playoff, but who knows? You know, maybe.
8-1 Michigan State being ranked higher than 9-0 Oklahoma is.
It's interesting.
That I find hard to believe.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I think people are skeptical of Oklahoma, too, because of their quarterback controversy.
For sure.
You know, benching Spencer Rattler, who was also on that QB1 show, just for the record. You know, it seems to be working for them, but I think people are just maybe skeptical of who they actually are.
And I think people are just skeptical of the Big 12 in general. You know, like, I just think it hasn't held up.
I agree. Yeah, a couple other big ones. NC State at Wake Forest maybe lost a little bit of luster, but I think the important thing that we take away from this is that NC State and Wake Forest are both ranked, and that just doesn't happen a lot.
Yep.
I see games like this, and I'm like, this is a basketball game.
Right, that's what I was thinking. They're not ranked in football, but you see they're ranked in basketball.
It's
so very
strange.
Notre Dame at Virginia. This one could be fun because Virginia scores a ton of points. I think the other thing, Michigan State 8-1, easily ranked ahead of an 8-1 Notre Dame team.
We love to see it.
There's nothing we love to see more, honestly.
That's pretty wild that,
yeah.
I think it's just really interesting that Notre Dame could go 11-1 and not make the playoff.
Yeah.
And I think, if you had said that in any other year, that would be crazy.
Yeah.
But this year, everyone unanimously kind of agrees, like, yeah, no, they suck.
Yeah. Like,
and I think a couple of things there. I also feel like, I mean, Notre Dame is always going to be Notre Dame, but I also feel like the bloom is off the rose there a little bit. Like, people realize that you pad half of your schedule with service schools and garbage teams, and, like, it's not that impressive. We all have the internet now and we can see who you're playing. And the other thing is they got waxed by Cincinnati. I mean, they got absolutely waxed. And, like, that really complicates the occasion, the equation, because if you're going to argue that Cincinnati is good and deserves to be in the playoff conversation, then you have to take it away from Notre Dame. Like,
right. Absolutely.
The only way that math works.
Yep.
Absolutely. Here comes to the rock fight part of the pod, Mississippi State at Auburn and Texas A&M at Mississippi. I don't know if any of these teams or the two games matter. They're certainly something. They're ranked.
They're definitely football teams, so that's good.
They will definitely play football, and someone will win.
Perfect. Yep.
The final one, Sarah G, will give you this one just because we're going to acknowledge Pacific Northwest football. Washington State at Oregon. Oregon, kind of the only hope for the playoff in the Pac-12.
Always, though, right?
Always, yeah. Knocking on the door, though, this year. That Ohio State game carrying some water, but it looks like even if they win out, it could be a tough way in. They're ranked number 5, right?
They're 3.
They're 3.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
They're in. I'm sorry. Wrong error. looks like that they've just went out there in, and that's pretty impressive. Now, who, I guess we don't know that for sure, but
yeah,
it'd be hard. They have the inside track, certainly.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I watch probably too much Oregon just because, like, you know, everybody's Pac-12 after dark or whatever. It's not after dark, though it is now, you know, with the time change. But anyway, I see a lot more of them than I really want to. And, like, they're fine. And but they also are very capable of losing to somebody stupid. So that's more what I'm waiting for. And then Washington State, yikes. Up there with their former head coach, buddy.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, no, obviously they made the right call there and took the right stance. But, just but interesting to see.
The players I met, you know, like when they've won a couple games in losing their head coach. That's no small task. And, you know, I think the other piece is if you're Oregon, you're looking at this and you say, like, we win out. Even if Oklahoma goes undefeated, can they pass us? I don't know if that's
not from eight. I mean, there's a 5-spot difference. The only thing you have to worry about if you're Oregon is Cincinnati getting in somebody's ear, right?
And you think no, because we're already looking at this
and Ohio State wins out, which there's no reason to think that they won't. To everyone else in the Big Ten. There's no, that Oregon being Ohio State is the best winning college football. Like,
it would appear that if everyone continues to win, the thing that makes it a little funny is Alabama will probably play Georgia. And if Alabama loses, they're out. Like, it would be very hard to put it two
ones. And that's where Cincinnati could maybe weasel their way in.
Exactly. Yeah. But if Alabama wins, now it's just a jockeying for position
situation. Right.
Absolutely.
So Alabama is basically playing to play Georgia later. Is kind of.
Yeah.
Also, I'm just looking at the rankings and they have the next game for this. Alabama's next game is versus New Mexico State.
It's true. The spread is 51.5 on that game.
Should be illegal.
The SEC really does get in these like end of the season cupcakes.
It's pretty bad. I literally hope no one gets hurt in that game.
Yes,
that's a good thing to hope for.
For both teams. Like Alabama. Yeah. I was long fearful of hurting our best players when I played sports just for being bad. So like I think he can go both ways.
Yeah.
So let's jump to the upcoming games in the Big Ten at 11 a.m. or at Central Time, God's time zone. Rutgers travels to Indiana in a game that we could all pretend didn't happen. Yeah, it's tough. Tough to get excited about this one, everybody. So, let's move on. Northwestern at Wisconsin. Northwestern always seems to give Wisconsin trouble, but it just feels like too much to ask this year.
Yeah, I'm not invested in that one either. So,
vitalized Wisconsin fan base. It's at Wisconsin.
It is.
Yeah, a hyped up Madison with a chance of winning the division in the second week of November. No, it's going to be drunk. It's going to be loud. It's going to be the people from Northwestern or the Northwestern players are not going to know what. They'll be like, can you guys keep it down? Like, we're not very uncomfortable.
You guys are making it very loud.
There's so much noise. If we could just have a quick pop quiz in the middle of this game, I would feel more at home.
The final 11 a.m. kick, Michigan at Penn State. This one appears to be near toss-up. Penn State is a one-point favorite in this one. We talked about earlier in the pod, this is these are the games Harbaugh is measured by, and he's come up short almost every time. Big opportunity for both teams here. The fact that Penn State 6-3 is not ranked is really confusing to me. I understand the Illinois loss is not good at home. Do not get me wrong, but they did beat Auburn, which allegedly is a team that is people.
I don't, but some people,
they beat Wisconsin, which is on the come up and is ranked. And they, lost to Iowa, which is not a terrible loss, I think, is the end of it.
I think the problem with this one is, like, what goes into Penn State's record requires a lot of context, and people do not have it.
Yeah.
Don't have it. If you didn't watch that Iowa game, you don't know that Penn State was beating Iowa pretty handily until Clifford got hurt, right? And then they had to put in a guy who's never seen a football before, and they still lost on the last possession of the game, right? You know, like, I just feel like people say 6-3, they lost to who? You know, it's not doing it. And I think that Penn State is aware of that. I think that they will probably see this as an opportunity to put themselves back in decent conversation up. You know, they already lost to Ohio State. So for them to keep their
– they're playing pretty tight at this point. They can't win the division. You know, they're hoping to not go to the Outback Bowl. But I will say, on the flip side, you know, unfortunate for a Michigan team and fans – because Penn State is not ranked. The College Football Playoff Committee is not deeming them as a good win at this point in time.
Yep.
So not only did they expect Michigan to win, but probably the style points, but Vegas is telling us that it's going to be a very much a good game. So that's that is a tough position to be in if you're a Michigan.
That's true. You're on the road. You're the number 6 team in the country in a game that's essentially a toss-up, and that if you win, you will get nothing.
If you win, you better win by a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that's tough, but, you know.
They're lucky that's an 11 a.m. kick also. Just to talk about, like, environments, they're lucky that that's an 11 a.m. kick.
I would say to see it, but I do love to see it, so.
We support it.
Literally every person in my immediate family went to Penn State, so I will wave my tiny, tiny Penn State flag.
We'll allow it, yep.
Purdue. Unranked Purdue, or no, they are now ranked.
They're ranked now, yeah. I don't know if that throws them off as the underdog, but.
It's over. Mm-hmm. Purdue, too much, they wilt under the pressure. They head into the horseshoe in a game that could have been plucky, but I feel like it's just a little too much of Ohio State's attention now.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen here is we're all going to be like, oh, maybe they are beatable, you know, like we were talking about their game against Nebraska, and then they're going to beat Purdue by 63 points. Like, that's what's going to happen here.
Feels very fair. A 20-point Vegas favorite in this one, and I think we can all see it.
I think that Purdue's defense could potentially contain Ohio State, but I just don't think that they're going to score 40 points like they did against Michigan State. I just can't see it.
Exactly.
I'll be lucky to get out of there with, like, a, you know, 21-28 or something, you know?
Yeah.
That would be good for Purdue. Yeah,
absolutely. The last game of the year, or excuse me, the week in the Big Ten, Minnesota heads to Iowa. A true rock fight game for me. This one, I have no intention of watching, but
it will happen. So that's good. It will
certainly happen.
Yep.
Another game that will take place and someone will win.
So let's jump forward to the Maryland preview. But beforehand, let's get back to a tradition that we've lost our way, or we haven't done it in a while. Why this program stinks. The Sarahs have led the charge on this one. We thank them. You guys have some of your own opinions, and we got some great tweet feedback. Let's hear it. Why does Maryland stink?
Ooh,
I think we have to start with, and I think our pal, MN_Izone pointed this out, but this is always going to be my answer. Your mascot is a turtle.
Yep.
Your mascot is stupid, and everyone knows it. Call it a terrapin. What's his name, Sarah? Testudo?
Testudo, yeah. And I sent you guys that terrifying picture of him.
Testudo is Latin for tortoise. So, like, is it a turtle? Is it a terrapin? Is it a tortoise?
Yeah, what are we doing?
Like, let's get it together, Maryland. Also, why does it gotta be mean mugging me? Like, why are you trying to make the turtle scary? You flip a turtle over and that's the end of it.
It's over.
A turtle is over. You.
Done.
You know, there are plenty of dumb mascots, but this one is the worst.
Yeah, from Jason Fry, we got crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does. I'll give them the crab cakes. They're exquisite, but they've never done football well. Their banner year is like 8 wins. Their program is a poor man's Minnesota. So I think that sums Maryland up pretty well.
I mean, Maryland has won a national championship in the not too distant past. Let's not.
Is that true?
Is that not true? Is
oh.
it? Okay.
It sounds true, but maybe I'm thinking basketball.
In basketball.
Okay, here we go for some reality TV content. Isn't Robin's husband from Real Housewives of Atlanta the point guard for the Maryland championship winning team?
Juan Dixon. Yeah.
In basketball. Okay.
In basketball they did. Yeah. I was like, football, no chance. Basketball. Right, I got it. We also got from B Bliss 2022 that Maryland has the ugliest state flag in the country. And I will follow that up with, they also put that on their uniform, which is troubling in most situations.
The attempt to be like East Coast Oregon with the Under Armour stuff and the flag, nobody asked for it. We don't want it.
We don't want it.
It's ugly and we hate it.
It's true.
It's unfortunate is what it is.
Yep.
Any more?
I think that pretty much covers it.
We have
a lot of there are bad drivers, but like
yeah, I don't, we have some notes for like just the state of Maryland.
Yeah,
they're bad drivers. I have a problem with towns that are named for colleges. So like Penn State, we're looking at you. Texas A&M, College Station, College Park, State College.
Yeah,
kill it.
Like that's the come up with. Like
yeah, right. That's all you had.
Mm-hmm. Also, Maryland has been looking for two zebras for 2 months, and they still can't find them.
How is this possible?
And so we're all going to die because we're going to be taken over by the cocaine hippos and the zebra deer. That's the end of the world right there.
Wow.
Maryland can't find
their zebras.
So I'll be honest. I don't know if the pod knows about my hippo obsession. So this is news to me.
Just, we'll let the listeners know, do your research, aka go to John's Twitter feed and he'll tell you all you need to know about the fact that the hippos are coming and we're gonna die. And we better take them seriously or else it's too
late. Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos.
Our people.
The short story is that there are hippos loose in South America and Central America and they're just running wild. And a hippo is scary. Anyway, so
it's
apparently they can't get their wildlife under control. They're bad drivers, apparently. Mm-hmm. And it's another school like UNC where I'm like, and this is why I started thinking about basketball. Sorry. Why do they have a football team? Does anybody care that Maryland has a football team?
Not me.
The Big Ten did when they expanded.
Well, that's a whole other conversation that I don't.
No, we don't have time. We don't have time for that. This is already an hour and 40 minutes. We don't have time to talk about that.
Yeah, that includes the 20-minute preamble we had. So anyway, it's just like, why do they have a football team? Nobody cares. Like somebody said, their banner season is 8 wins. Like,
sure.
They go 2-6. They go 8-2. Who cares?
Literally nobody. We do on Saturday because we'll be tuning in to watch. Michigan State takes on Maryland at 3:00 on Fox. MSU with 13-ish point favorites, which sure. The computers are saying feeling confident. 83% chance of Michigan State winning. I don't hate that. 5 out of 6, we'll take it. And you know, I think the most important piece, another thing we need to come bring back is the roster names. It's important that we get back to our roots here. So hit me with some Maryland roster names before we jump into the preview.
Yes, they have some great ones. I actually had to narrow this list down a lot. Let's start with the punter, not somebody we talk about a lot. Their punter's name is Colton Spangler.
Oh, wow.
Are you sure he doesn't play for Texas?
Yeah.
That's a Texas punter.
It's quite a name. They've also got someone named Jayon Venerable, just a solid last name. Reuben Hippolyte II. Now, I love it when somebody goes with the second instead of junior. Like, that's really,
really
a move. Almas Titi. It's funny. And then we have the Shockley brothers, Ernest Shockley III and Zion Shockley. And I just have to imagine, like, you're Ernest Shockley III, and you're, like, named after your dad or whatever. But you're still, like, a six-year-old named Ernest, right? But then you've got a younger brother, and his name is Zion? You've got to carry that and think that it's unfair. Being a six-year-old named Ernest is...
That's tough. But I picture him in, like, a nice suit all the time, so that feels good for me.
Yeah, they've got some real good ones. I had to kick a couple of off here just because there were so many, so check that out if you're into names.
Oh, it's... This is the best part, is, like, I don't know what one day started this idea, but there are just so many good names, and we just, my name is, I feel, a little boring. You know, we read these names and you're like, wow.
I think Sarah and I have done this ever since we were in college, and I think it's because we have the most boring first name on the face of the planet. Yeah, yeah.
My last name brings some heat, but like nobody's trying to pronounce that, so.
Your last name does bring it, but yeah, it's just, when you have a very like sort of normal, unremarkable name, you're like, imagine what it'd be like to name Zion.
Living by service starts every week.
Yep.
Yeah.
So last year, Maryland won 2 games, but.
Who amongst us? I also wanted to point out that in 2019, they scored 79 points in a football game.
Wow.
Versus Howard. Yeah, that's exciting.
They also won 4 games that year somehow.
One maybe should count for 2, but, you know, we can't go back in time. But anyway, over 70 points in football. Congrats.
It's so Maryland of them. I imagine it took place in September. They lost to Penn State last week, as we covered. Their quarterback, quite good. One of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten. You may know his older brother, starter for Miami Dolphins. And I'm not going to attempt to do the name because we have guests that are going to give it a shot.
Not me.
I am going to try. Okay. I think that this is pronounced. I apologize to the family if I'm incorrect. Talia Tagovailoa.
Perfect.
Is correct.
I think we'll be. Well, as long as we don't get another message from
his mother.
Much like Michael Phoenix's mother wrote in.
You know that's not right.
You know it's not right.
Well, maybe we'll hear from her again. Who knows? This is a team that is good at some things and terrible at others. Okay. They do a very miserable job at basically defense. I would call it all of it. I was trying to pick if they're rushing or passing defense. It's basically, this should be a game where we should assert ourselves on the offensive side of the ball. You should feel comfortable with that. This is, I would call Maryland in between of Western Kentucky and Purdue. Like they are as good or more competent offensively, maybe more complete team than Western Kentucky, but very comfortable throwing the ball 40 to 45 times a game, maybe more. Their defense is not nearly as good as Purdue's, though. So I think you're going to feel that's why the computers like this team so much. But the offense, Michigan State's going to have to score because Maryland's going to put up points.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what you guys think.
So my concern is the same concern I'm going to have for every game for the rest of the season after the Purdue game, which is I'm worried about Michigan State's defense allowing 500 passing yards.
Yes.
Probably will happen again.
So against Penn State, which you guys have talked about on the pod before, is a very good defense. They're ranked, I think, in the top 10 nationally. They're way up there. Right. Their quarterback was 41 for 57 for 371 yards. Now, they only scored 2 touchdowns on that performance, but.
I don't understand that.
I didn't watch the game, so I can't. Yeah. But this is a scenario we were talking about earlier. Michigan State was like, throw the ball 50 times. Okay. Tua 2 is going to do it. He will throw the ball 50 times. This is going to be where the bend, don't break thing comes in because Michigan State is going to have to limit red zone trips, which is obviously what Penn State did, you know, and limit the damage in the red zone. So that's why I will be worried about this for every game.
Now that we've seen how bad it can be when it's bad, you're gonna pay attention to that even more. And we always knew, like, you're playing with fire when you're playing bend, don't break defense. And even though Mel said, like, that's not what we want here, well, that's what we have right now. So it's kind of just like, we are where we are. And also, what I really want to see out of this game, from the Michigan State side is those dumb penalties, right? Like, because if you already know that you have a defense that is going to give up yards, you can't gift them yards as a present, right? And so, like, let's tighten that back up. And I think that's why you see us being the favorites in this game, is because it's just like, we know what we're capable of, but we saw what happens when it all falls apart. So clean it up, fellas.
And I think that the reason I'm worried about this from the rest of the games is because we've got this game against, Maryland, where they have a good quarterback, and then our next game is against Penn State with Sean Clifford, who we've already discussed, and then, Ohio State, then Penn State. But still, we've got Maryland, we've got Sean Clifford, and we've got CJ Stroud left on the schedule, right? If anybody's going to make Michigan State pay, those are some guys.
It's tough. Yeah, though you think you can – Penn State is maybe a little bit too stubborn, but Ryan Day and Ohio State have no problem let CJ Stroud let the Chapa sing.
Like, exactly. That kid
throw 60 times a game, and they have a million different athletes that are going to go catch it up. That's next week's problem. We'll worry about that later.
Correct.
But Maryland is a team that you certainly can't overlook. I think the biggest silver lining and maybe a piece that we should feel hope with is their defense just really struggles. You know, they have had some occasions recently where they've just given up points to teams that really don't score as much. Indiana, most recently seen scoring 7 points against Michigan, dropped 35 on Maryland just the week prior. You know, I think you can look at, Iowa. They averaged 21 points a game if you take out their game against Maryland. Well, in that game, Iowa scored 51 points. You know, like this is the – Ohio State scored 66 on them. Now, Ohio State can score on anyone, but 66?
Yeah.
Like, you can feel pretty good about Michigan State's offense, even if Jalen Naylor isn't playing.
I think this is a game where you can see K-9 take advantage of that, right? Because he is the kind of, you know, running back who doesn't go down at the first tackle attempt, right? He finds a way to escape. And so I'm hoping with, you know, a less than good defense, he's going to find those opportunities again and be able to put up points if we are giving up points on the defensive side.
Yeah, and this game's also at home, which I think will be a welcome, return to some familiarity. So,
in the afternoon. In the afternoon, so the fans can get a little worked out.
It's 3 o'clock kick.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely, you know, this team is, it's always just a matter of like I said earlier, it's deeply flawed, right? Can the offense outstrip the defense is, you know, giving up points? That's always the equation for this team. You know, the defense has to minimize damage, and then the offense has to just score. And so if Michigan State, here's something else I'd like us to stop and start doing. Remember when we were scoring on the first possession of every game? Now we're turning the ball over on the first possession.
Yeah, I hate that.
Strike that and reverse it. Let's go back.
Settle for punting.
Punting, not turning it over on the first possession. I think you get out, because that just, for a team that relies on its offense, right, it just takes all the wind out of the sails. And in both of these cases, the Michigan game and the Purdue game, they were driving. You know, they had home plays together. You know, Michigan game was a little more, they were in a little worse situation there. But the Purdue game, certainly, they had put, you know, starting to put a little drive together, and you turn the ball over, and then you're just, it's tough sledding from there on out. So let's not do that.
Yeah. You know, for what it's worth, you know, not to harp on the Purdue game, but, you know, is that team elite? No. Is their defense very good? Absolutely. You know, scoring 29 on them is, we talked about the past games, or the past, excuse me, past seasons. Those offenses were so bad.
Yeah, so bad.
It doesn't mean that should be like the bar, but it's just, it's refreshing to have a team where you're like, hey, we're never out of it.
Like, it's also funny because we forget so quickly. Again, Sarah and I were talking about some past seasons earlier, and we looked up the score for the Ohio State game in the 2014 season, which is a game that Michigan State lost. And I believe that game was like 49-37, which is mind. We immediately forgot that. The offense got bad, and we were like, we have never scored points.
We've always been bad.
Yeah. Points are impossible, and now the offense is good again, and we're like, yeah, points. We love it. We love to score.
It's so true. It was literally like 5 years ago, and we just pretended it.
No memory. Yeah.
No, I don't know her. Like, it truly is. It truly is bad. So, and I think that this also gives us an opportunity to do some of the stuff we talked about earlier, making adjustments on the offense minus Naylor. If Maryland's defense is that soft, if Michigan State is able to go up a little bit, run some plays for the big boy.
Run some plays
for Tyler Hunt. You know, let's try some different looks. Let's get some people involved who have not been involved in the offense, because you know, the Reed, Naylor, Walker trio is incredible. You know, we all know that, but taking Naylor out of it definitely hurts it a little bit, and diversifying the offense would certainly not be a bad thing.
Well, and then you also wonder on the flip side, is this become a Heisman campaign where you just you Walker the ball and you're like, it's really important for us to, who knows, assert that his stats.
Score 5 more touchdowns. That's fine
exactly,
with me.
Exactly, right?
That's fine.
There might be some in this game. I would imagine Michigan State is going to score more than 40 points.
Wow.
Say it. And there may be some touchdown hunting
going on. It's probably their last, if they're interested, if the staff is interested in running up the stats, it's probably their last opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
Playing State and Ohio State in the last 2 games, you're not going to get a lot of chances to pad the stats, right? You're going to get what you get.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is the game that MSU has to have to make things continue to be interesting this season. This is a game you'd like to think that Michigan State can win, should win. They're the better of the team. They're the better roster. It's a home game. It's in the afternoon. All indications MSU would be very disappointed if they dropped this one. So
yeah.
I think dropping the Purdue game, we were all kind of like,
yeah,
as discussed earlier, we were like, this is fine. We can roll with this. You lose to Maryland at home?
Nah.
This is the number 7 team in the country. Now you got a problem.
Well, let's back up. Before the season, when this team was, you know, Vegas over under 4.5 wins, this was a game on the schedule that people were like, you should win this one.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Even then.
This was one of our 4. This was one of the 4 we were supposed to get.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts I should leave the listeners with? Viewers, I don't know.
Viewers, they would have gotten a beautiful show here. Here's what I'm going to leave the listeners with. I really don't want to lose this game. So that's what I would like to take. I would like people to take away from this.
As previously established on this and other podcasts where Sarah and I have hosted, we hate losing and it's not fun.
This Michigan State's fans have spoken. We represent all of them.
It's hot take. Losing is bad.
Clearly, you guys are referring to the Western Michigan basketball game this Friday as well.
Yes.
I think we should make it a sweep this weekend. What do you guys think?
I'm in. I'm ready.
Nothing more.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much for joining. This has been so much fun. We can't wait to see you or hear you later, maybe in a holiday podcast.
Christmas pod. Oh, yeah. We're coming back for the Christmas pod. But if it's back after another loss, I'm going to write a letter to management, and I want my voice heard.
Totally fair. It's good feedback, constructive feedback. We'll let Izzo and Mr. Tucker know. Well, thank you guys again for tuning in. For John, this is Sarah, and we'll see you guys next time.